here.
And then Sue Kroger says she was going to be absent. We have Derek Espada.
Here.
We have Jonathan Lee Confer.
Here.
Perfect. And then we have Megan Bradjevich.
Here.
Perfect. And then we have Zach Koble.
Here.
All right. And we have Ray Jordan.
Here.
All right. And then we have Chaz Gross.
Here.
Perfect. And then Cam Juarez. All right. Sounds good. And we have quorum.
Okay, great. Thank you, Stephanie. Hi, everyone. My name is Zach Koble. I'm the chairperson of the Commission on Disability Issues. Thank you for attending or joining the Commission on Disability Issues. We're excited to have you. I don't know that there are, but if there are members of the public that have something to say that are not part of the City of Tucson or the commission, now is your time to, you know, to be recognized. And, you know, if you have an issue that concerns the disability community, please feel free to let us know about that. Either take yourself off mute or raise your hand. I'll just wait for 1 or 2 minutes, or, you know, like a little bit. Okay. I'm not seeing any movement or, you know, signals. We will move right along to our next agenda item, which I believe is introduction of new members. We do have one new member on the call. Chaz, do you want to introduce yourself and, you know, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're interested in Cody, or what you're interested, you know, in Cody about?
Chaz, you're muted, actually.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Hello. Thank you, Zach. I was on a committee recently where I was referred to Ward 6 for some information, and they came up with this opening, and when they explained it to me, I thought, you know, that would be a great place to get into conversation, I'm happy to do that. I'm a grandfather, guardian, and caregiver of a 22-year-old young man with autism who works at Beacon Group very happily and is traveling on his own there and back with Sun Van and developing ongoing levels of future independent living skills and maturing. And I'm very immersed in that project in my retirement and happy to be a part of this conversation as well. So thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining the commission, Chaz. We look forward to, you know, your input and definitely like Sun Van, public transit, and, you know, a variety of issues, all like concern members of the commission. So that's definitely something that we cover. In fact, I think we don't have an agenda item for Sun Van today, but we do have, I think we have some representatives from SunTran/SunVan on our call. And that's something, you know, like we probably tackle at least a few times a year. So if there are any other, you know, issues that you're passionate about or that your grandson is passionate about, you know, please reach out to me and, you know, we can agendize them or, you know, figure out what we want to do as a commission. So
great. Thanks. Thank you. Yeah. We've had a great experience with Sun Van. It's a real quality of life issue for me and the way that it's helping the community. And our experience has been excellent.
Great. Happy to hear that. Okay. I want to move on to our next agenda item, which is consideration and a possible approval for the February 2026 meeting minutes. So the way this works is, you know, if people have changes or additions or, you know, corrections that they would like to make, now's the time to voice them, or, you know, and you can do that by taking yourself off mute or, you know, raising your hand, whatever. And I pause for that. But if there is no, Ray?
Well, thank you. I'm not sure who puts together the minutes, but whoever you are doing a great job. It's Brandy, maybe, or Stephanie. Excellent. Not too much, not too little information. I'm happy. I approve.
Great. We always appreciate our liaisons and their hard work in helping us get through these meetings and document them. Ray, would you like to offer a motion to approve the minutes?
Well, sure. I'll move a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now I will be looking for a second.
I second.
Let Kate.
Okay. Thanks, Kate. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Brandy, again, will you take roll call for approval of the minutes?
Of course. Thank you, guys. Kate Elliott?
Yes, approve.
Thank you. Sue Kroger? Oh, Sue Kroger's not here. Sorry about that. Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Thank you. Megan Bradjevich?
Yay.
Thank you. And Jonathan Lee Comfort?
Yes.
You and Zach Kobel?
Yes.
Thank you. And Ray Jordan?
Yes.
And then are we voting with the new members?
I don't see why not. I don't know that there's anything in the guidance that says they cannot vote.
Sounds good. I just want to double check. You got it. And then it'll just be Chaz then. Oh, I'm so sorry. You're on mute again, Chaz.
You just need to leave that off. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Thank you. All right. And that passes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. So our next agenda item is presentation and discussion with Tucson Police Department representative. Miss Schaffner, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that.
That's totally fine. It's Stacey Shaner.
Shaner, thank you. Thank you for your presentation and your presence here. Floor is yours. I know there was a presentation kind of handed out beforehand, but I don't know if you want to share that.
Yes. Give me a moment here. Make sure I can operate this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you all see the screen?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
You might want to put it in presentation mode, though, because, like, you're kind of in the edit mode, so half of the slide seems to be – might be cut off.
Let me go to the next slide just to verify. Are you seeing that navy blue box?
Yeah, we're – oh, okay.
Does that look
maybe
better?
Not.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. It just – I wasn't sure if it was cutting off.
Not anything. A problem at all. No, I have it on the PDF on the side here just so I can reference it as necessary, but I like to be able to see everyone's faces when I present. So keep that under my camera as best I can. So if you see me looking – off to the side, it's because I'm referencing my PowerPoint.
Oh, no worries.
So, first of all, I'd like to take a quick moment to introduce myself. My name is Stacey Shaner. I'm an assistant chief with the Tucson Police Department. I currently oversee the Special Services and Innovation Bureau. It is a mouthful. We call it SSIB. That bureau is one of five bureaus that we have here within the police department. And what I have responsibility for under my purview is kind of a hodgepodge of things. So I'll list some of those. On one division, I have the community engagement division. So I work closely with our outreach units. If you've heard of our core unit or our mental health support team, I work closely with them. I also work with our emergency management section, which deals with major events, special events, off-duty employment, threat mitigation, and a couple other things. I also have our community engagement coordinator, which I will touch on in one of my slides, so I'll move on from that piece. I also have the academy. A piece of what I will touch on today goes to our training, both at the basic level, post-basic level, and then advanced officer training. And then I have the specialized response division. That is SWAT, bombs, hostage, traffic investigators, motors, DUI, the air support unit. So kind of all of those specialized services that enhance response to patrol operations as necessary. Prior to that, I worked in the Patrol Services Bureau, so I had all four patrol divisions. I've been with the department for about 21 years. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually spent a lot of time working with CPARB, which is another commission within the city of Tucson, but this is my first opportunity to engage with your team, and so I'm happy to do that, and I look forward to this opportunity, so thank you for having me today. I do have a total of about 10 slides, including the introduction slide and the question slide at the end, so not too much, but feel free to stop me at any time. If you have questions, just know that I might say, hey, I'm going to get to that later on. And then I welcome any questions or conversation from all of you. So are you okay with me getting into the presentation? All right.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So before I get started, just a little bit of an understanding of how the Tucson Police Department is broken down. We have approximately 1,200 staff. That is a mix of what we consider sworn staff, so those that carry a gun and a badge, and then professional staff, which is a variety of support positions that help us meet our mission and our goal. As I mentioned before, we're broken down into five bureaus, and in the city, we have four patrol divisions. City of Tucson covers approximately 240 square miles. Thank you, Jennifer. There we go. I apologize. Sorry. Tucson covers about 240 square miles. As you know, City of Tucson's about 550 population in the city, about 1.1 million in the metro area. For reference, I think what, you know, most of the community is familiar with are those that are in uniform. So the patrol officers that respond to calls for service in the community, or they might be conducting traffic stops or proactive engagement with community members. Out of that group in Patrol Services Bureau, I want to make a note, and this is why these type of opportunities are very important, but I want to make a note at the tenure of those officers. So 41% of those sworn personnel have only 4 years of service or less. If you bump that up to 9 years of service, that's an additional 27%. So the majority of our patrol staffing have the least amount of tenure, and those are the people that we put in the position to respond to the biggest unknowns, right? They're responding to the 911 calls for service. They're engaging in the proactive activity out there. So it's always good to note that they are our youngest, least trained individuals, but they have probably the biggest burden on their shoulders in dealing with the widest variety of circumstances that they will face. I wanted to make a note when it comes to, and we can talk about this further later on if you would like, the Tucson Police Department employs people with a variety of abilities. As far as what it takes for a sworn police officer, there are standards, physical standards that the Arizona Police Officer Standards and Training requires upon hiring. We don't ask any of those questions. Everybody is allowed to go through the process. At the end, they have to go through a medical test to see if they can meet some basic functions of the job. But as long as they can do the job, they are fully capable of being employed here. In fact, we've hired people into the job that had amputations. There's a sergeant that did a career with us that had a leg amputation, and we've continued to employ people throughout their career when they have sustained significant injuries. We had an officer a couple of years ago that lost his leg in the line of duty, and he continued working for us. He has chosen to move on to physical therapy school. So we're very happy to the next endeavors that he's chosen to undertake in his life. But we, like I said, we have the ability to hire anyone of all abilities, especially on the professional staff side. And like I said, I'm happy to answer any questions about that later on if you would like. Go to the next slide. Some of our basic training that I'll start out with here, as I mentioned earlier, we have our basic academy. Arizona Post is our governing board, and they define minimum standards of training. We as a Tucson Police Department run the Southern Arizona Law Enforcement Training Center, and we add in additional training, as well as we require different training throughout employees' careers, depending on what needs might come up or different refresher courses that are due because it's been a while. So in the Basic Academy, we have the Behavioral Health Crisis Response Training, which covers disabilities such as cerebral palsy, epilepsy, autism. Basically, we're looking at how to recognize symptoms and how to interact and communicate with individuals. The goal is to meet people where they're at and try to de-escalate crisis, because most people don't call 911 when they're having an amazing time, right? A lot of times people are upset. There's a lot of emotions involved. They're facing a crisis. They're not sure what to do and they need help. So the sooner we can recognize and understand how to communicate with people, the better we're going to be able to help get those investigations into in a productive place. Interpersonal communications class, that is one that helps. There's a piece of that helps us not only talk with any member of the community, but there's a portion of that that helps us communicate with people who may be deaf or blind, and talking about how we can work through some of those things. ICAT is Integrating Communications Assessment and Tactics. That is a training that was developed nationally by the Police Executive Research Forum. So there's a lot of training, or there's a lot of research behind that. And basically, that whole program talks about how do we engage with individuals in the community to help de-escalate and communicate with them to reduce any type of harm, both to the officers and our employees, as well as community members. So it's really about slowing things down, communicating, and thinking about what's important now in conducting our investigations. It has a specific module that talks about crisis recognition and teaching us how to engage with individuals that might be have a mental or behavioral health crisis, or maybe they have an intellectual or developmental disability. So it provides us some tool and some scenario-based training to help get us through that. And then recently, I think your team might have heard about this program that we instituted a couple of years ago, where we had individuals that use wheelchairs or mobility access devices to help or to get around in the community. And that actually stemmed from an officer-involved shooting that we had. And we recognized that we needed to better understand how to engage and how to interact, but also what capabilities are available to us. And I have to tell you, that was one of my favorite trainings that I've been to in a long time, because the group that put it on did an amazing job. They brought in a variety of mobility devices for us to experience, right? We got to use them. We got to try to disable them in a productive manner, find out where some of the, like the power kill switches are, feel how big and heavy they might be. You know, if we're thinking, well, you know, maybe if I need to stop someone's path to prevent them from putting a community member in harm, you know, the thought was, oh, well, you know, maybe I just knock it over. but they can be very heavy. So it was such an informative class that we continue to take many of those lessons, and we've incorporated into our basic training, and we've incorporated into our community service officer academies, as well as advanced officer training, which is the ongoing annual training that we complete each year. Next slide. One of our flagship trainings that we've been engaged with my entire career, and that's so 21 plus years and long before that, is crisis intervention training. You may start to hear it used interchangeably with crisis response and intervention training, so from CIT to CRIT. It's the same basic foundation. Basically, the curriculum focuses on equipping first responders and others with the skills to handle different mental health crises, behavioral health conditions, physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, by teaching de-escalation techniques, trauma-informed practices, understanding the impact of substance use, community resources that are available. And that's a 40-hour class that involves people with lived experience and family members and experts within their fields coming out to teach the attendees directly. So it's not another police officer teaching what they've learned or what they read in a book and now they've learned to train. We're learning from people that are experts in this field or have the lived experience, which is super important to us. I will tell you that the national standard for CIT training within law enforcement agencies, they want agencies to strive to be at 20%. We are at approximately 50%, and we continue to try to raise that. A couple of years ago, we partnered with the Department of Justice Services on a grant that created a crisis intervention training coordinator position within Pima County that allowed us to go from 2 classes per year to 3 classes per year. Which just, like I said, I mentioned the tenure of our patrol officers earlier on. The priority goes to patrol officers. And so we try to get our newest employees through that training as soon as possible. And then any other people that made it through their patrol time and have not yet had the training. We also incorporate employees of public safety communications or the 911 system. We have fire employees and then also surrounding agencies. So it's this idea of creating a culture that goes beyond, a narrow vision of just TPD. We want to make sure that everyone has access to that training. We also have mental health first aid in the CSO Academy, so we teach that. Go on to the next slide. The Blue Envelope Program. If you guys haven't heard of it, maybe you have, but I will share. This is something that we newly got involved with as of early 2025, I believe. So this is a program that there's state legislation behind that is designed to ensure that traffic stops are conducted in a safe manner for both the officer and the individuals involved. It helps to provide information and understanding so that we can very quickly de-escalate situations and help understand how we need to respond to what we might be experiencing. And it just makes it safer for everyone. A big piece of that is understanding that, sometimes we might ask questions, or interact in a way that can feel, threatening. It can be scary. I know I've been pulled over in my personal vehicle, and my heart rate still goes up, and I've been a police officer for 21 years. So I can imagine if it's the first time that somebody's been pulled over or they're not sure what to expect or they're fearful, this helps with that communication. Basically, it's what it's called, the Blue Envelope Program. These envelopes are available at MVD. We also have supplies at all 4 patrol substations, where an individual can request one, and it helps them put all of their information in one place. They know they can present it to the officer. The officer knows when they see that, it immediately helps de-escalate because they know that it will contain the proper information, and they know how to interact with the individual that provides it. In Arizona, just so you know, in Arizona, we actually increased we actually enhanced that program a little bit through legislation that allows for notices in through MVD to be attached to vehicle registrations and license records. So if somebody has an ID card or a driver's license, they can elect to have information about a disability that they have added to their record. And so when an officer runs the plate or runs their driver's license, that information is readily available to them. And of course, that's a voluntary program. They're not required to provide that. So the reasonable accommodation request form, program is something that a colleague of mine, I believe, Jennifer Bonham and her predecessor, Shelley Tolman, were involved with in developing that program. Now, the legislation that came out with MVD kind of made a little bit of this not relevant anymore, because you can get the information shared on your license or your vehicle through MVD, but we still wanted to make sure that this opportunity is available to members of the community. And the website link is right there. That is the it's on the city website. If you go to the Equal Opportunities Program tab, you'll be able to find the form to fill out to start the process of requesting a reasonable accommodation that can then be connected to a driver's license, registration, and we can add it to a premise entry. So somebody's home, if they want to do that. What we do add for everyone's safety is we request that it be updated annually, because we don't want someone to move and then information that's not relevant still be left at a premise. So we try to move that. A similar program that's available nationwide is Smart 911, if anyone is familiar with that or has heard of that program. That is a similar platform. It is a paid program to participate. We in the city of Tucson created our own. So if anyone were to call in or ask of a resource to say, hey, do we have a Smart 911 program, we can refer them to this process, which will accomplish the same things. Somebody could call into 311 if they don't know what to ask for or where to start, and 311 operators will be able to guide them to the proper location to either ask questions or start the process. In my intro, I mentioned we have a community engagement coordinator. Her name is Margot Sesko. She's been with us for about 6 years. She was a city business owner prior to closing her business and starting to work with the police department. She wears a variety of hats. She runs our volunteer program. She runs and manages a quarterly refugee coalition meeting. She does a lot of recruiting opportunities. But one of the newer responsibilities that were added to her plate is actually two things. She's our LEP liaison as well as our ADA liaison. So I will admit that we recognize that the prior person that was designated as the ADA liaison was not really aware of having that responsibility and did not necessarily probably stay up or accomplish what they were supposed to do. And so once we had recognized that, we transitioned that responsibility over to Margot. And I can tell you, because she works for me now as of the last 2 weeks, she is hitting the ground running, taking every opportunity she can to learn about what the role and responsibility is, as well as to look at our policies, our practices, our procedures, and find opportunities, to make the necessary improvements. She is engaged in the current, the digital, I'm not going to say the right name for this, but there's a process right now where we're going through and reviewing all of our digital outward facing forms, websites, to ensure that they, are ADA compliant and make sure that we're up to speed. She's doing a great job with that. We are ahead of the curve. Our regular, grading that we're getting is showing that we're making a lot of progress there. So I'm really grateful that she's taken a lot of ownership in that program to make sure that we get everything up to speed. As you can imagine, we have a lot of forms. We have a lot of documents that have been used over the years. So it will take some time, but as far as identifying what those are, and making changes with the form. So those are what are being used moving forward. We're doing a pretty decent job with that. All right. Couple other resources. So again, we have 1,200 employees here at the Tucson Police Department. And depending on someone's roles or responsibilities or experience, they may or may not have a lot of opportunity to interact with members of the public that have various disabilities. But we want to make sure that they have resources available to them. Through our general orders, are basically our policies and regulations within the police department. Some of those reference certain laws or requirements that have to be accounted for. One team is just our, we call it our wiki, right? It's our Wikipedia of information. We do have different information sources on that page. We have an ADA accommodation page. We have a new one that was created regarding creating PowerPoints, Word documents, website information to ensure that we're creating it in a ADA accessible fashion as opposed to having to identify it later and go back and fix it. So we're putting that out. Service animals, you know, we don't interact a whole lot with service animals because their handlers, their owners are very responsible with them. So typically it's pretty easy for us. But we do occasionally get the calls from members of the community that say, you know, this person's here and they have a dog and they're not supposed to. So that way we have resources to make sure officers know, you know, what the allowances are and what, you know, what is okay and that, no, that they are allowed to have their service animal with them. So we make sure we're supporting that in the proper manner. We do have two legal advisors. They work for the city attorney's office. They are assigned to us full time. And so they will answer the phone 24/7. And they also work with us on policy development and ensuring that we're in compliance there. Recently at our Commander Quarterly, so we do four times a year, we bring all commanders together. There's about 77 of us total. And it's typically an all-day training opportunity. At the most recent one in January, we did have a section where one of our employees presented on the digital process that we were going to and the updates there. Again, trying to change that culture and help us understand how to create from scratch so that we don't have to go back and fix later or make work for other people. And I apologize. I think Jennifer will correct me if I'm wrong. I think she fixed it to the 25th, but I think it was the 24th, so I might be using the wrong one here. I think the form that you have should have the proper date on it. It was April 24th deadline. All right, and the final information slide I have for you. I wanted to take the time to talk about some of the community engagement that we do. These are some of my favorite events, but I think it's important that we're not only interacting with people with disabilities in times of crisis when they call and need us. It's a great opportunity for us to interact during fun times, during good times, and have those positive interactions so we have the opportunity to learn about each other and make those improvements on our own proactively. Tucson Police Department is a major supporter of Special Olympics of Southern Arizona. We volunteer and engage at all of their local events down here. I just signed up. March 28th is the track and field event. I'll be there all day. I'll be the MC that will be announcing all the awards. I love doing that. You probably can't tell from the video, but I'm only 5 foot tall, so I prefer to be the MC because when the athletes are standing up on the platforms to get their ribbons, they're just that much taller, and it's hard to reach. So I always volunteer to hold the mic for that one. We do the law enforcement torch run every year. That's coming up. A couple of years ago, I was recovering from a knee injury, and I was sad that I couldn't participate in the 5K run. We do a run. And that year we decided to add a walk to it because there are plenty of police department employees that weren't in a position to want to or be able to run a 5K. And so we added a walk, and in that we invited many of the athletes out to join us. So now we have a route that does a walk that then meets up with the run, and we get to all come in together. It's an amazing opportunity. The Night to Shine by the Tim Tebow Foundation. If you've never heard of that, Again, a beautiful event. It's always the last Friday right before Valentine's Day. And we get all dressed up in our Class A uniforms, and people come in with prom dresses, and it's a beautiful night. We dance the night away. It's a great opportunity. Get to know people over the years. I've got Facebook friends from many of these events, from some of the adult athletes and participants that we see. It's amazing. And then the one last opportunity I wanted to highlight, because it was a fairly recent one that got some good reviews and we'd like to build on it, is that the Arizona Autism Society reached out about having an opportunity for families and children and adults with autism to get to interact with the police department. And so a group of individuals came out, and officers came out. They had a day at the academy where they got to learn from each other. And we'd like to take that opportunity and expand from that. Again, it's another opportunity to learn and better understand and create that connection, so that when we are out there in the field or we're dealing with those crisis situations or 911 calls, we're doing so from a higher understanding and acceptance of different abilities out there. So that is my presentation. That is my information right there. You can email me. That is my cell phone. Feel free to call or text if you have any questions about anything. But other than that, I want to hand the floor back over to you guys, and I welcome any questions or thoughts that you might have for me.
Thank you, Assistant Chief Shaner. I really appreciate your presentation and your presence here. As I usually do, like, I'm going to kind of cede the floor to other members of the commission. First, if they have questions, I know I have a few, but if other members of the commission have questions, please take yourself off mute, raise your virtual hand, as Ray did just there. So Ray, you get the first questions, and then Megan, then Jonathan.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Very informative. I just like to know what the LEP liaison is. I've not heard that acronym before.
Thank you. I apologize. That's my miss in the presentation. That is limited English proficiency. So that is a program that accommodates and ensures that we have legally necessary requirements for limited English speakers, in that we do partner with the language line. So 24/7, any officer can call and coordinate with the language line if necessary to ensure translation opportunities.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. One more question. How aligned is the training that TPD offers all of their staff as compared to the other police departments around the country, which I believe is a really great number?
Yeah, so there are 18,000 police departments across the country. Don't hold me 100% to those numbers, but about 18,000 police departments, 800,000 police officers or deputies of various ranks. Every state has a certification board. In Arizona, it's called the Peace Officers Standards and Training Board, so Arizona POST. Many other states use the term POST also. But basically, they set the standard for minimum training. I can't speak to exactly what they have within their requirements or their curriculum, but I do imagine that something of a similar nature as far as the basic requirements go. And then, like we do, my hope would be that many other agencies or training academies would build upon those minimum standards, because the standards, like many things we deal with, tend to fall behind need. And so it takes time for those standards to become a commonplace or to be put into law. But oftentimes we identify very early on that we need some additional training in different realms. And like for us, one of them was the mobility access devices, wheelchairs and such, and needing some hands-on training with those.
Thank you.
Oh, one more piece before we move on, though. I will say that we have the Southern Arizona Law Enforcement Training Academy. So while we run the academy, other jurisdictions from anywhere in the state, but traditionally from Southern Arizona, can attend our academy. So when they attend our academy, they're getting those same basic academy-level trainings. The Sheriff's Department does run an academy, so they'll get some surrounding jurisdictions to attend theirs. Also, their curriculum is very similar to ours. So we do share that beyond our agency. I think, Megan, you were next. I think you're on mute, Megan.
Thanks. Well, thank you so much again for the presentation. Welcome to the first meeting. I hope we have more. I kind of going off of what you just said, you were saying you wished you had more training with like mobility devices, you said?
So we do have training with mobility devices, but that's new training. That just got implemented at the end of 2024 into 2025, because that was something we recognized after an incident that we needed more of that. So that was excellent training, and we've continued that beyond the initial department-wide effort that went out.
And can I ask who you partner with to how do you get the training?
I had a feeling you would ask that question when you asked that. I can't remember the name, but I can look that up and I can send that back to the group for you. But there was a group that put on the training for us, so I can get you that contact. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, thank you. And then, my final question, since you've already answered the other ones, which I'm grateful for. With the Blue Envelope program, what goes in the envelope and what other communication modes do you currently use?
Let me, I think I can pull something up for Blue Envelope. If you just give me a moment.
Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to dig out with this question is if you use nonverbal communication accommodations.
That's a good question. Let me sample this up because I can show you, and if it ends up taking too much time, I will go away from that. But let's see here. And it might be because everything is running super slow. Darn it. It is. Okay. I was going to bring up a picture of what the envelopes look like because I don't have one with me. But basically it has all the required information, you know, so if it goes into a vehicle, it has insurance information, has driver's license information. It has registration information, but it also has the ability for them to provide any relevant information to the disability that they want to share with the officer or any needs. It doesn't even have to be specific to what their disability is. But if they say, I request that the officer speak at a higher volume or in a slower manner, you know, so we can put those specifics in there. And then, like I said, anything that they want to provide to us. But the biggest piece of it is that it is a blue envelope. So if we see that, we immediately know, okay, there's going to be some helpful information in there and, you know, have some patience, right? Like sometimes we need the reminder, slow down, have some patience, you know, that type of thing. Open up your heart and work through this. And that envelope kind of triggers that opportunity because it's a consistent object that we recognize. And then your second question, I apologize. Can you repeat that for me?
It was if there's any nonverbal communication training or if there's like ways that you could accommodate people who prefer to speak with imagery instead.
So absolutely, part of our training is, and some of our first steps are, if somebody has the ability to read and write, we'll go straight to, you know, that type of communication. There's recognition of different devices that exist, but typically we will work with loved ones or friends or providers that are present, or do our best to find someone that might have that recognition to understand how the best way to communicate is in those circumstances. But ultimately, because sometimes we'll get calls about missing people, and so we might encounter an individual that maybe is nonverbal and has some struggles with communication. And we do train in general about how to keep the situation de-escalated, help individuals feel safe. What it might be, and we have to take what they're doing, right? We have to play off of what we're seeing from them to understand. If I'm too close to someone and I recognize that they feel a little bit agitated or they're giving those signals to me, then creating a little bit of space and backing up and seeing if that creates a change. It might be seeing what they're interested in. Maybe they're looking at some flowers in the grass, and we sit and talk about the flowers while we're waiting for somebody to help us find someone to help with those experiences. So a lot of that training has to do more with recognizing some signs and having some tools to interact, as opposed to specific devices or specific different diagnoses are and stuff like that. I hope that awesome. Answered your question. And if you have ideas, I'll take them.
It sounds like if anyone needs to use like imagery, it's best to have it in their envelope. It's kind of like you have to be prepared for your needs if you're going to do that, which is good to know, just so I know to advocate to my clients, like, and people I know, that if that's something they need, like, they need to do that, not something that like you guys will provide, and for them to not expect that, even though you guys have so much training, it sounds like. And I'm glad that it's all research backed, like you guys are doing the work and listening to the work done, so thank you.
Yep. And again, it does help them advocate for themselves, so that helps break down those barriers for us in the moment. But if it's as simple as needing to provide them a notepad so they can draw on, or pens or writing devices or whatever it might be, those types of things we would offer up. But we don't have, a variety of other tools at our disposal. So thank you. Jonathan, I see your hand.
Hey, Officer Shaner, thank you so much for coming and giving a nice talk. And I've been sharing transparency with the entire program and the trainings and everything. I'm looking at the CIT, that's slide 4. I like that the national standard is 25 and we're doubling that. Like, that's super laudable. And when I think about the numbers, if we have two randomly selected officers trained or untrained in a car going to a crisis call, that would indicate on numbers that 1 in 4 individuals with a disability are interacting with two officers with no training, mm-hmm. which is kind of still a significant number. Mm-hmm. Are there metrics or, I guess, goals you guys are trying to reach to for saying, like, okay, how many officers are we looking to be trained in total, like above 50, even though it's double the standard, but is that number you're looking for?
Absolutely. So 100%. But ideally, we want to get everyone trained, and that's why we put the priority on patrol officers, because they tend to be the youngest and have the most opportunity to have interactions and need to have that crisis intervention training. One of the things that we do that help support connecting the correctly trained officers with the needs of the individuals associated with call for service is that officers log on and they indicate that they are a CIT trained officer. So the dispatcher can see that, and they can call their designator and say, are you available to take this call? So we do take steps to do that. If an officer that doesn't have the training is in a situation where they think it could be useful, they will request a CIT trained officer to respond to assist. So we have that option too. We do the best we can. We would love to have 100%. The addition of the third class was very helpful. In that, we do lose people that go different places, or a lot of, when people promote or leave patrol, and so they're not in that first responder, first line of response role, they do take that CIT training with them. So they are still available, but then they're not necessarily part of that younger crowd. So every time they put out a patrol, or a CIT training, it goes to the patrol officers first. So anyone of any tenure that hasn't had it, or the people that have recently graduated from the academy and field training, they will be prioritized because they're going to be the first to respond in those situations.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you, Assistant Chief Shaner. If you have a few more minutes, I have a couple of follow-up questions myself. I was curious, so if the percentage of TPD officers that have the CIT training is at 50%, is the percentage of patrol officers significantly higher than 50% if that's, you know, if that's who you're focusing on first?
I did not run that number to see where we're at currently, but I can tell you about 4 years ago when I was running those numbers, it wasn't 50-50 as far as patrol versus non-patrol. And that's why we recognized the need to run more classes. Because like I said, when they leave to a different assignment, they're no longer in that, first responder role primarily. And so, We knew we needed to run more classes to get those numbers up. So it's not a one to one, and it's I'm not even sure in our systems if I'd be able to pull that easily for you without a hand by hand and are they in patrol or not. But definitely a need we're trying to fill is to ensure that our primary first responders in patrol have the training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was more just out of curiosity. My second question has to do kind of with, I guess, the Blue Envelope program or the state legislation to implement it on driver's license and ID card, like identifying information in terms of disability on ID cards or driver's license, and then the reasonable accommodations. Like all those are super great options and, you know, I would imagine very helpful in kind of a tense situation. But if a person is, homeless or maybe a pedestrian doesn't have an ID card, you know, doesn't have a lot of access to systems, you know, like, is the Blue Envelope program open to them? Like, how does that, like, how does that work? If a person doesn't have, like, a residence, doesn't have a car or driver's license, you know.
That's an excellent question. And we do take that into consideration. So the notification is not actually printed on their driver's license. I honestly don't know if there is something that's on the back or not just to reference it, but it's in the system. So when the officer runs someone's name, and they don't have to have a driver's license or a license plate or a residence. If that notice is tied to their name in general, when they run that name or the dispatcher runs the name, they will get that response, and then the officer can read it or the dispatcher can share it and say, this person requests this accommodation. And then the officer will do what they can to honor that accommodation request, obviously within reason and, and work through that. You mentioned people who are homeless, individuals who don't have a place to live at this time. Another thing, it's not necessarily related to this, but a similar strategy that we implemented because we saw an opportunity to better connect people has to do with housing vouchers and recognizing that the housing navigators were having difficulty finding individuals because obviously if they're living out in the community, they aren't typically in the same location all of the time. And so if we have contact with them, we get a notice. It's a non-detention notice. We can't hold them for any of that, but they'll say you have a housing voucher available. So then we can tell them, call this number. If it's during business hours, we can give you a ride over here, and that connects them with the right resources. So it's kind of a similar opportunity where they don't need to have anything in their possession. If they had a blue envelope and they wanted to carry it because it had information that was important to them, we would absolutely honor that. So
okay. Cool. I was just kind of curious how, you know, how the overlapping things worked. Absolutely. For people who kind of fall through some cracks yes. A lot of times. Those were my questions. Do any other members of the commission have, you know, a few last questions? I want to just make sure I give opportunities. Jennifer, I think you, Chaz, I see you, and then I think Jennifer Bonham, our ADA coordinator, might have had something to add, because I see her hand up. And then Chaz, I'll get to you. You're next.
I can't hear you, Jennifer, but you are off mute.
Right. Yeah.
This is a recurring issue. There was a question, I think, from Commissioner Regovich. I apologize if I mispronounced that. About the entity that did the training for TPD. I believe it was the entity name is Disability Response Training.
Mm-hmm. And Megan, we did receive, before you joined the commission, we did receive a presentation from one of the leaders of that entity that I can probably find in my documents that I'm happy to share. I'm sure he would be very happy at contact. He was gregarious and very full of information. So,
well, thank you both. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, Chaz. So,
thank you, Zach, and thank you, Officer. It's a great presentation. What occurs to me is the extent of this work on the part of the department is really, really impressive. And really important. And I'm wondering how well it's known or how well it's disseminated to the people who need it. I have been in and out of support groups for many, many years and resources and DDD in the works. And there's very little of this information I've heard before about how to best prepare yourself for the world with the information that can support you in the event of an intervention with first responders. And if it's not, if there's not an avenue for its dissemination, what could that be?
That's an excellent question. And I will tell you that's where we struggle the most with many of the initiatives and strategies that we implement as a police department. It's really telling our story. It's discussing about the things that we do, that we work on behind the scenes, and then getting that information out to the community so that it is accessible. Exactly what you said. How do we help get that word out there? And I think, for me, this is one of those opportunities. Having the commission, who informs the mayor's office, the city manager's office, having them help get some of that information out, going back to the ward that you represent and helping to share some of those strategies that are out there. We do some, you know, social media type posting and stuff like that, but I know that that can be fleeting, right? It's out there in the moment and then it's gone. I'd actually like the opportunity, and obviously I don't need an answer from anyone, but it's something I would be interested in knowing, and basically turning that question around to you and saying, how do we better connect with the communities that need the information? And then do so on a regular basis, because like I said, oftentimes we'll push something when it starts. We did some media release when the Blue Envelope program came out, but then we haven't redone it. And so how do we help the community know what's available to them in those situations? So like I said, I'd welcome any thoughts on that now or in the future. It doesn't matter to me.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'd be happy to be a part of working on that issue and how we might contribute to some solutions in the dissemination of this information. And maybe it's a little insert in your Social Security check. I don't know. Some way that's very broad-based and would really cover the landscape of the people with this need.
Megan, I see your hand.
I think Jennifer's hand was up before mine, so I pass it to Jennifer.
Sorry, Jennifer. Oh, I have nothing further. Thank you, though.
Your hand was up
yellow, so. Yeah, I think I agree with what Chaz was asking and how you're turning it back on us. And I think, I mean, I know Zach is the chair and I don't want to speak for all of us when I say this, but we're all directly connected to the communities that you are looking to reach out to and talk about all the new things coming up. And I think if we get to share those resources with wherever we go back to along with the ward offices, I think even just emailing us as it comes up, or if you guys make flyers, email us the flyers or send it to us, or I can email you so you can get my email, so you know you can send it here. But I guess I want to pass it to Zach and see if that's something that we can make as like a long-term thing, or whoever's going to be on this committee, you can send us an email to all of us, or yeah, whoever would like to be a part. Zach, you're muted. Please unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. Megan, you cut out for just a minute, but I think I caught the gist of, like, you know, I think as a commission, we can certainly, you know, we do try to have, you know, semi-regular meetings with some of our appointing offices. That's something that, you know, we can mention. Certainly the appointing offices, many of them have newsletters or, you know, resources within their office that they could share, you know. Like, additionally, I think, you know, in terms of, like, TPD, like, a response, you know, there are, I don't even know how many, but, like, you know, a good many community events that are by and for disabled individuals, you know, like, of all types of disabilities. So, or, you know, just community events that attract a large amount of people, like Tucson Meet Yourself. So if there is community engagement time, just kind of showing up with, where TPD is, you know, showing up anyway, having the information of, hey, there's the Blue Envelope Program, or, you know, there's, like, other information. So if people ask,
I think that's an excellent strategy. I can make sure that our, like, when we go out to events and we have tables, typically they're of a recruiting nature. But it's beyond just employment recruiting. It is the opportunity for us to share what we're doing. And so I will make sure that Margo and her team and the recruiting team have access to the blue envelopes as a suggestion, and they can take that and provide it. So if community members see it, you know, and we can say, here, have this. So.
Assistant Chief Shaner, I had a quick question on Margo. I wanted to clarify. So did she just because I don't want to email her and, you know, be overwhelming or, you know, reach out. Did she just become the ADA liaison, or did she just become supervised by you in the last couple of weeks? I wasn't sure which. Okay.
Both technically. Okay. I just rotated over to this position, I think at the beginning of the month approximately, into this bureau. I've worked with her for years. She just happens to be housed over here. She also just became our official ADA liaison probably within the last month or so. Not very long at all. Maybe 6 weeks, time flies, but
I'm sure she's great. She sounds very passionate and awesome, but I just didn't want to, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm just getting my feet wet and here's all these questions.
You know, I would say if you have questions or thoughts, please share them with us. Like I said, you have my email. If it becomes overwhelming, it's because we have some work to do. Right. So I think that's a good way for us to learn and understand. So, like I said, we'll take that information. And if that's, like I said, if it's overwhelming, that's because we're not properly prepared, and we have some areas to make some changes. So it's good for us to know now instead of later. So.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Assistant Chief Shaner. I appreciate, I'm going to move us on to the time. I appreciate yours, and I appreciate your ability to, you know, be open to you know, exchange and future contact. So I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Absolutely. Did you guys need me to stay on, or do I leave the meeting at this point, or?
It's completely up to you. Okay. You're welcome to stay on, okay. But you don't have to.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Thank you. I look forward to speaking with you all later.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Okay. All right.
Thanks. Okay, everyone. So now that, you know, thank you for the productive discussion. We have one other agenda item. This is announcements, and typically what this is a chance for the commission members to announce any events or happenings around town, or things that they have done that have, you know, have to do with the disability community or areas of interest, you know, for Cody. So I have a couple like of announcements or clarifications that I want to address. As I was like going through kind of my meeting notes for this meeting, I realized I had not emailed Sunvan representatives about the on-time percentage reports and, you know, getting a more regular update. So I did that yesterday evening. So I know some of you might see some representatives of Sunvan or the Department of Transportation and Mobility on the call. So any not having that information is completely my responsibility and not theirs, because you know, they certainly deserve like more than 24 hours of notice to provide, you know, to try to provide something. So just want to clarify that, you know, and I'm hopeful we can engage in the next couple of months, with a substantive agenda item, just in general. So that was my announcement. But if others have announcements or things they want to, you know, want to mention to the commission, I'm all ears.
Currently, we are looking to staff a panel of people living with disabilities that are students at the U of A. And I said that I would do it. I would be a backup panelist. But I'm from ASU, and I'm not going to play like I go there, but I also want tomatoes thrown at me. I know, Derek. I know. I'm just saying, if you know anyone who might be interested in doing this panel discussion, I can send you some information if you know any people living with disabilities that are a University of Arizona current or previous student. So, thanks.
Do you know when that approximately is, if that's part of the Disability Studies Conference, Megan, or
There's going to be like an educational session during the week of the men's wheelchair basketball national championships at the U of A, and they have a few things that they have planned in that panel is part of it. I think it's around April 3rd. I want to say April 3rd or 4th. It's that week. It's the first week of April.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Speaking of that, there is Tucson is hosting the National Wheelchair Basketball Association Championships. I should have mentioned that. I believe that is like the last day of March and then the first week of April, running through April 6th down at the University of Arizona. Should be a good time. Wheelchair basketball is super fun to watch. I'm a basketball nerd, so any chance of basketball is a good time for me. But any other announcements? Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. We're running a little bit under time this time, but I don't think that's typical. So we will probably have some more substantive agenda items for next month. I look forward to you all joining us. I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you, and please reach out if you have questions.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.